Hi, welcome to Cloud Cover. My name is Ryan Dunn.
And I'm Steve Marks.
Today on the show, we will be talking about how to use CSPAC, which is a little world outside of Visual Studio. It's a command line tool you might or might not be familiar with. Visual Studio uses it in the background. Steve's got a great demo. Really just talking about how this will work in any editor, but we're going to be using WebMatrix for this.
Yep.
Before we get to that, we will cover the news as always and wrap up with a tip on the week on using CSPAC. All right, let's kick it off.
All right, first up, Ryan, you probably know a little bit about this. I'm guessing
this is the training kit.
This is a training kit update. Yeah. The September 2010 update going out, what, October 5th?
Well, it was created in October or
if
September.
If I recall correctly, wait, let me go check this out. Yeah, one of these is August. the executable says
wait,
August.
Wait, refresh. That should be fixed.
No, what do you mean refresh? I just loaded the page.
Uh-oh.
One of them says September. Did we find a problem?
Oh,
right,
it
here.
Just says 2010. It used to say 2008. Okay.
Well, that's even worse. Okay. Anyway.
Oh, you know why? It's because only the Visual Studio 2010 stuff has been updated.
I see. So this is actually
correct.
August stuff for VS 2008.
Correct.
Okay.
So what's happened is we have some new labs, for Windows Azure, for SQL Azure, for App Fabric, and I believe even for ACS in there. We have some new labs. There should be a list of the changelog content in this post.
Yep.
We decided that the kit was getting huge, and we had to support 2008 and 2010. So the call was made, well, let's split those into two separate packages and really only focus on 2010 going forward. The problem is that to test 30 labs or whatever, we have at least 30 labs in there now, to test across every operating system and 2008 and 2010, the test matrix starts to get just huge.
It's easy to test. You just publish it, say it works on everything.
Yeah.
And then you see how many people complain.
And then go fix us.
And then, yeah, I mean, yeah. Come on.
So the new stuff should be in 2010, I don't think.
Okay.
Going forward, we won't be working on the 2008 version. So,
yep. So it's all .NET 4 stuff now? And
.NET 4 in some cases, 3.5. But even if you don't have 2010, don't get upset. You know, you can still use the Express version, which is free. Use WebPI. Just download it, install it. It works great. And unless we specifically need to use something in .NET 4, I think we keep targeting 3.5.
Okay.
So
yeah,
so it's really just the project format.
Seems reasonable. Good. So that's out. People were waiting eagerly, apparently, for this in the time between taking down the. We saw a tweet of someone saying, "Hey, where's the June version of the platform training kit?" Because
it was down for 2 hours while the links were propagating.
But that was long enough because people are constantly.
I got four emails on it.
Four.
Internally, so yeah.
So
it's there.
Good. People were waiting for it. I actually just downloaded it. I haven't cracked it open yet, but I picked it up. So
well, there should be actually one other big thing I should point out in there, in addition to the new hands-on labs, mm-hmm. is all new presentations.
Good.
They've all been updated, all new content that for you to take a look at. So lots of good stuff in there. And if folks have feedback on it, there's feedback links within the kit. If you really wanted to, you could probably send something
right here,
to me as well.
It says email.
Yeah.
Email azcfeed.
Azcfeed is the alias. But if forgetting that, if you remember that I have to do a lot with this kit, you could just probably send it to me, because azcfeed, I believe, forwards to me at some point.
Yeah, it's this list with only Ryan on it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on.
there you go.
Next up, we didn't have to go far. We went just down the page on James's blog, and we looked at something else that has just come out, which is the Windows Azure Application Monitoring Management Pack. Which is now available. Basically, this is the System Center, this is the SCOM pack that you can sort of plug in.
Right.
It will let you basically do similar kind of things that you can do with the portal plus diagnostics. So it lets you take a look at all the applications you've got running, see how many role instances you have, change the number of role instances, configure diagnostics, take a look at that stuff. So it does all that stuff. As James points out, there are other tools for that, such as the Windows Azure MMC management tool and the Windows Azure PowerShell commandlets. But I got to warn you that those were created by somebody who we have no knowledge about. Okay, yeah, no respect for Mr. Ryan Dunn here. So, you know,
SCOM,
be careful.
SCOM stepping in my tool business. I was making a lot of money selling that MMC
that's
as
it.
Well.
Microsoft's just muscling you out of that.
Out of my own business. Yeah.
So that's cool. There's going to be more stuff on this, but this is the first version of this, which is people have been asking about, because people who do use SCUMM to manage all their like on-premises assets want to know what the story is to kind of integrate that with Windows Azure. As I said, this is a process, but this is sort of the first step to sort of unify those things.
Right.
So people should check that out if you do use SCUMM. Next up is a white paper that I found on the SQL Azure blog, and it's about connection management in SQL Azure. And as far as I can tell, I haven't read the whole thing yet, but I've sort of skimmed through it. And basically, one interesting thing about SQL Azure is because it's built in sort of this redundant fashion or whatever, you have to, like with any of these things, handle connection failures and sort of retry logic and things, so that when that failover happens or something else goes wrong, your service keeps running uninterrupted, which is the whole idea, right? So that happens with SQL Azure. This paper talks about, first of all, how to reduce how much that happens. So what are the things that cause you to lose a connection? Right. How can you avoid those where possible?
Like throttling.
Exactly. Kind of thing, those sorts of things are in here. That being said, you're still going to have to expect that sometimes you will get these errors. So what do you do with it? What are the patterns for sort of coding around that, handling the errors and sort of retrying? It's a pretty detailed thing. It talks about really all the reasons why, I like this list, it's all the reasons why you might get a connection terminated, so that you know what those things are. Yeah. And then as it goes on, it talks about the errors you'll get, how you can prevent them, and how you sort of do retry and manage that.
Yeah, I heard it. I heard an interesting thing, which was that sometimes the code generated from things like ORM, so if you're using like Hibernate or Anhibernate or something like that, sometimes the SQL that those particular things produce is suboptimal. So you'll run into these scenarios that you see in here a little bit more often than if you were to, say, code a stored procedure yourself and do it. Now, you need to weigh the benefits, of course, of how much productivity to get over the ORM versus handcrafting my SQL statements or, you know, whatever it may be. And you'll have to take a look at this, but I have seen a few cases where folks are like, hey, you know, my query's taking forever or I seem to be getting throttled. You go trace the statement, and it's this big, long, nasty thing. You're like, well, did you write that? And they're like, well, actually, no, it was my favorite ORM that did this.
Right. Yeah, so interesting. A good place to look if you see things like that is where all these things coming from, because often it's not your code.
Yep.
Cool. We've got an update on this because we covered this, I guess, in the last show, or was it the one before
two,
that?
It was a couple shows ago.
Yeah. But there was this vulnerability discovered in ASP.NET that had to deal with
the Oracle padding attack.
Oracle padding thing. Blah 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 crypto that I don't understand. But basically was a real serious security risk.
And it impacted everybody if they had ASP.NET installed, even if they weren't using it. So if you were a PHP site, but you also had ASP.Net enabled, you actually were impacted by this. Which there was a lot of confusion on whether or not you were actually
if you
were hosting WCF servers,
using ASP.NET,
I'm using WCF. And but you were on IIS host with ASP.NET, so therefore you were still vulnerable.
Interesting.
But the good news is it's fixed.
Yes, it's been fixed. There's an update that you can go get from Windows Update. So if you are running your own server and you want to get this stuff, go get it from Windows Update. If you are a Windows Azure customer, you're using this in, and I hope you are if you're watching the show, and you're using Windows Azure, we have a new Guest OS build, Guest OS 1.7, which started rolling out. By the time everyone sees this episode, it'll already have been a week since it started rolling out. And what we're saying is that by the end of 2 weeks, everybody will have it. So it's this process of, so you may see Guest OS 1.6 is the latest version that you've got, while I might see 1.7. That's just because it's sort of this rollout over time across all the data centers and things. So I think by now a lot of people are seeing Guest OS 1.7. If you see that as an option, if you're on automatic OS upgrade, you'll just get it.
Yeah.
If you're not, I really recommend that you choose it.
If you do a new deployment, in a lot of cases, you'll see 1.7. But if you don't do automatic upgrades, you should check right now to see if 1.7 is available.
If you have 1.7, get it.
Yeah.
Because it takes care of this issue. In the meantime, or if you're just curious about the other stuff, we have a link in this post that goes back to Scott Guthrie's blog post about how to determine if you're vulnerable and what steps to do as a workaround, which are still valid and you can still use. Okay, I guess one last thing we should point out about that is if you had some website that was running that was vulnerable for some period of time, you should consider that some things may have been compromised. So you should think about regenerating keys if you stored those in web config or something. If you have secrets in there that may have been exposed, consider those as things that you want to regenerate or roll over. So we'll leave it at that. Okay, so this last thing is not directly related to the Windows Azure platform
but
and the cloud.
But it leads into it.
But it's such a nice segue into what we're doing. Unbeknownst to me, I was working on the demo that I'm going to show. I was working on this last night, having no idea that a brand new version of the stuff that I was playing with was going to ship the following morning. So we're recording this on Wednesday, which is when this blog post went out, announcing, among other things, a new version of WebMatrix, WebMatrix Beta 2. I actually think probably the most exciting news for most people who are watching this is actually the ASP.NET MVC 3 beta is coming out.
Yeah.
But I was playing with WebMatrix and the new Razor syntax that goes into there, and that's what I was kind of kicking around. WebMatrix Beta 2 came out. I installed it this morning, and as you'll see as we get there, totally messed up my demo. But we still have a working thing. We can actually go through almost everything, but I'll tell you where.
So what we're trying to tell you is don't use WebMatrix Beta 2.
No.
Oh, that's not what you're saying.
No, what we're telling people is if they were using WebMatrix Beta 1 and then they have an important show to record, shouldn't upgrade till after the show. I think that's what we're saying. Because some stuff did actually change in there.
But we have it working locally.
Yeah. So anyway, so what are we going to actually do? I've got WebMatrix installed here. I wrote some code, built a little app, got it working all locally, then wanted to go deploy that to Windows Azure.
Yep.
And that's what we'll sort of talk about is what did I have to do to get those bits that were working locally to go work in the cloud, given that it was not a Visual Studio web application. Yeah. It certainly wasn't a cloud project with roles defined and whatever. So I sort of had to go to a layer that a bunch of people never really go to, which is that the actual raw SDK, which has command line tools and lets you do that. So that's what we're going to talk about, is how to use those tools, and along the way, kind of what specific stuff with WebMatrix I ended up doing.
You know what's kind of interesting here, too, is this is not even specific to WebMatrix, right? I mean, if you're using any tool other than Visual Studio that doesn't have an integrated packing experience. Now, we have some plugins for Eclipse that actually do this, but let's say you didn't have those plugins. You're using Eclipse. Or you were using some version of Visual Studio and you just don't want to install the tools. I don't know.
Yeah.
The reality is that we run code, and we run, as long as you have a role entry point defined for worker roles, some project that has a role entry point, we're going to run it.
Yep.
And the other is, if you have a website, even if it's a web project or a web application, either one of those will actually run in our cloud. The problem is that a lot of people assume, I forget which one we have, I always get them confused, but is it
web application? Is the only thing we support in the Visual Studio?
Is the only one we support in the tools. So if you had the
website
projects, then you would just assume that, oh, you don't support that in the cloud.
Right, I got to convert it.
That's not it.
It's
you
not
can
true.
You can take those projects and do the exact same thing we're doing
here. You can take a directory of .html files.
Yeah, exactly.
And we can happily deploy that and stick IIS in front of that and serve that up.
Yeah.
But you have to tell us you have to package it up and tell us what's there. And
exactly.
That's the part that's sort of special. The command line tools for PHP are probably the closest sort of thing where we've shipped sort of the package where all you do is write some PHP code to put in a directory, and then you run this little tool, and it does all the rest for you. That's kind of like what I've done here. You'll see, it's remarkably easy to do. All the gotchas I had around getting this running were more around DLLs. Did I have the right assemblies that WebMatrix uses because they're in the GAC locally but not in the cloud?
And you're running against beta stuff. At some point in time, MVC becomes final. It gets deployed to the cloud or comes part of the framework, and it's
and
just up there.
And you just pick that stuff up. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, this shouldn't be very different from the story for like ASP.NET MVC or one of these other things where it's just like, if that binary is not in the cloud, you set it to copy local, or in the case of what I'm doing, you copy it into the bin folder yourself, right? Because I'm not using Visual Studio for this, and get it. Why don't we just run this app?
Okay.
And then we can why don't we just take a look at the version of it that's running in the cloud? Well, I guess we can look at both of them. They're the same, and that's sort of the point. This is cool. This run menu actually lets you can, if you want, just click open in all browsers. Every browser you have installed, including, I think this last one is like the Pivot browser. Remember it's sort of like based on IE and whatever. I've been playing around with testing this thing in Chrome, so let's fire it up just to show we don't always have to use. I guess since we're not using Visual Studio in this one, let's not use IE either.
Okay.
And we'll go there. So I have this simple note-taking application, basically, with no security. Anyone can go put notes. I'm going to have to take down the app, the public app, before people go crazy with it. Someone's put a note in here called the enemy of the show, which, of course,
Brian Keller,
as everyone knows, is the enemy of the Cloud Cover show.
He knows what he did.
So basically lets you look at these notes. It lets you add new notes. Brian Keller, he's the enemy of the show, right? Add a note, and now I got that thing.
I like the Ajaxiness of this.
Oh yeah, let me do this one more time. Check out the highlighting. Add note. Whoa.
Oh.
There was yellow fade sort of thing.
That was Ajaxual.
I spent more time than I care to admit playing with jQuery and getting these things. Check out this thing then. Ooh.
Sliding.
Let's collapse these things down. Okay, so that's what it does. It uses blob storage in Windows Azure to actually store the data. So this is actually a list of blobs that are in Windows Azure. Title is metadata on the blob. And then the body is the actual text of the blob.
Now, why didn't you use table storage, out of curiosity?
Oh, look, when I hit back, it didn't. Cool. Why didn't I use table storage? No particular reason. There's one thing that we should talk about, which is these storage helpers, these Windows Azure storage helpers. Yeah. And that's actually the reason why I originally went down the path of blobs, because I thought that I'd have better support from those helpers. These are web matrix helpers around this thing.
I thought
that was going to be easier. I ended up actually not using it anyway, so I ended up just using the storage client library. I often think blobs are a little bit easier to do for stuff like this.
They can be, yeah, for sure. Especially if you want to share the notes, I suppose, because then you go use shared access signatures.
It's kind of nice to have them just as isolated, since I think of them as documents. Here, they're more documents than they are like entities or objects in some system. And I never do any querying across. There's no querying I do and whatever. And so it's the sort of thing where I'd be very tempted when writing this on some other platform to just use a list of files. And if I'm going to do that, then blob seems
blob
sort of more natural
sense.
Fit.
Yeah.
So you can actually see these. We can see this should be that one blob that we have there. This is Clumsy Leaf Cloud Explorer, just to kind of take a look. And if we look at the metadata, we'll see title, enemy of the show. So that's where it is. That's all it's doing. I wrote some code to do all that stuff. This sort of random aside into the coolness of web matrix stuff in Razor, because actually I'm really into the Razor syntax and now having coded with this for a while. And just if people are trying to kick it around, I found that the easiest thing to do was build a little helper class, move this outside of that code in the page.
Mm-hmm. Are they all static methods?
And they're all static methods, including I actually have a public static string, which is the connection string. So I'm actually just putting in...
So you're sharing that among every... Okay.
Right in app start, I'm just setting the connection string just sort of globally for the app. It seems like the pattern that I've seen with a lot of the web matrix stuff of putting like data connection strings and things like this. So I put it in a little static thing. I wrote basic CRUD operations. So I have a note object.
Right.
I have get notes. This should probably be called list notes or something. There's an add. There's a get, which gets an int for one. And there's a delete. And those do the various stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it. And so in pages like this, I just have a little code that calls in those helpers. So this one calls get notes.
Right.
And if it's a post back, that means we're adding one. It calls the add note thing.
Okay.
Pretty much it. I mean, I'd actually love to share more stuff about how this thing actually works, and I probably will on my blog. But that's sort of beside the point, because what we want to get to is now that we have...
You tested it locally, it's awesome, and now you want to put it up
in
the cloud.
How did I get this version, which is the same, should we prove it, that it's the same data? So if I add something here, if I refresh here, we'll see the same thing, because it's actually using cloud storage in both cases. So that's the question. How did I get this up into the Windows Azure cloud, given that I didn't have Visual Studio, I didn't have a project, I was using a bunch of binaries that are not part of what's installed typically in Windows Azure? What did I have to do? And that's what I'd like to talk about next. So let's look at
what... This isn't going to be too scary, is it?
This is not going to be too scary. It's a little bit scary, but don't be too scary.
You're outside the box.
I'm outside
the box. But not way outside the box.
But I'm not actually... Yeah, I'm not as far outside the box as people think. Again, the hardest part about this was actually this. If we go into Hello World. This bin folder was the hardest part about what I did. Okay, so because if you just go, if you build a web matrix project and you go browse to it in the file system and go look at it, you'll see there's no bin folder, which is actually nice, because everything's in the GAC locally.
Right.
That doesn't work if you go deploy. So I went and looked at what happens if you use the web matrix tool to publish.
Right.
And so I actually set up an FTP server on localhost, published to it, and it wrote out a bin folder with all the stuff that I needed. When I did this with web matrix beta 1 last night,
it worked.
I just took that folder, bin stuff, I deployed it, everything worked. When I did it today, it didn't work if I had all those things in the bin directory. And so I'm going to have to follow up on my blog and tell you guys exactly what steps you need to do to make sure you have the right stuff in the bin folder. But the bin folder stuff is basically the same issue as Visual Studio. You have to set copy local to true on binaries that are not in the GAC in the cloud.
Right.
So it's the same issue here, but since I'm not in the Visual Studio context, instead of saying copy local, I'm actually just copying it locally by copying it.
So there's another trick. I don't know if you knew this or not, but if you were to have opened that project in Visual Studio and right-click publish, you can publish to file system as well, and then you don't have to set up an FTP server. So
do you think it would work? I'm wondering if Web Matrix itself does some magic.
Does it publish a file
to figure out the bin?
I don't know.
Web Matrix won't do the only options in the Web Matrix tool were publish to FTP or Web Deploy. Okay. Actually, there was like an
well,
FTP
you know, Web Deploy would work too, because if you did Web Deploy, it creates a zip.
Can I do that on I couldn't figure out if I could do Web Deploy on a non-server. On Windows 7, is that...
Yeah, as long as you have Web Deploy installed on the machine, it'll do Web Deploy.
I thought I tried to do something like that. I couldn't get it to work.
Mm. Yeah, no, it should work.
Anyway, there are a few ways to do this. Basically, this is a way to get the system, the publishing system, which actually knows what needs to go there, to tell me what I need to put in there. Then I put that stuff all in, sort of in the bin folder. Yeah.
But it's a good trick. If you can publish whatever it is that was working locally, that strips out, in a lot of cases, strips out the CS files and...
Yep.
Proj files and all those different things, and gives you the pure whatever it is.
It's a good
to
way
run,
to get exactly what
grab
you want.
Grab that. Yeah. That is what you're going to package.
Yep. So I did that. Then I did. Let's open up in Notepad++. My personal favorite Notepad. How do I increase the font?
There's a zoom button there.
Yeah, but there's some cool way to do it from the keyboard. Anyway, it's actually probably big enough. So there's not much here. I added this. There was no web.config in the project that I started with, because it's all sort of set up the right way on the local machine. I added a default document to put in this so that these files, these Razor syntax things, are CSHTML or VBHTML, depending on whether you're using C# or VB.net.
Mm-hmm.
I was using C#, so I added this specifically to the default document thing.
Right.
That's it, just so that if I go to the root, this thing shows up. I turned custom errors off so that it was easier for me to debug stuff that went wrong. And I added this because I found when I was looking around on sort of web matrix sort of deployment known issues and whatever, there was this issue about if you don't actually put .cshtml in the... It's an issue of getting ASP.NET to go look at this, even if the URL doesn't contain an extension that ASP.NET knows about.
So you have to do that, yeah.
So this turns that on and makes sure that every request, because the web matrix stuff does this very cool routing stuff where there may be no such file, or there may be a file, but then it looks like I'm looking for a directory.
Well, MVC's like
you need
that
to make
too.
Sure, yeah, MVC, the routing in MVC does the same thing. So you need to make sure that ASP.NET Engine is invoked for all these things.
Right.
So you got to do this little run all managed modules for all requests.
You know what you should do in here for the default document?
What?
Performance tip. You should remove
everything else. Do like clear first?
Yeah, because what happens is this gets added to the end, so it's going to cycle through all the other ones first and then hit that.
Done.
It's the number one performance tip.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
That's cool. So there, I'm going to save it. Done. We added clear here, right here on the show.
Yep.
This version I can't deploy anyway because I haven't figured out the bin folder stuff, but that's it. So I added a web.config just so that I could put those things in there. So that wasn't there. And now... what I have here is a project that I think I could just copy onto an IIS box somewhere.
Right.
And that's the state that I need to get to before I can do the Windows Azure stuff. So at first I had a version that works fine on my machine because I happen to have the right assemblies and application OS config has the right things in it, whatever. I put the right assemblies in bin, I put the right things in WebDuckconfig. Now I have something that's portable that I can actually take to some other machine.
Correct.
And perhaps I could take it to a virtual machine in Windows Azure. Now I need to figure out how to take that, package it up, and give it to Windows Azure to deploy. So what I did here is, we can ignore this, we're going to regenerate it. So let's get rid of it. Okay. So what I've got here is a service definition and a service configuration. This is, we talk about these files a lot. In Visual Studio, you tend not to look at them directly, but when you double-click a role and change settings and things, that's where it goes.
The important one really is the definition, because you can generate the configuration.
That's true. The package the package command, the cspack command, will generate an empty config for you
based on the definition, right.
So really, this is the important thing that you have to do. It's really simple. I just copy-pasted from some other project I had.
Yep.
This name you'll have to know when you later use the command line to pack these things up. So you need to know what this name is. You need to declare, HTTPN. That's about all that you need in here. You can get CSPack to generate this for you, which will have, notice the role name here matches up to what we had in the CSDef file. The service name also matches up
between
the
two. I notice you're running two instances.
I'm running two instances because I want to make sure that I'm up all the time. That's it. There's not a lot here.
Right.
The CSDef one, you are going to have to copy paste from somewhere else just to get started, I think, unless you can memorize the XML and S here, the namespace here. So you'll probably copy paste that from somewhere. This you can get generated for you by the CSPack command. I forget the exact syntax, but there's some slash generate. It's
generate
easy
config.
To do. Go in there and change the instance count to 2 and send any config settings. I'm not using them because I hard coded that. Connection string in my
in
project.
Best practice
to do that. But if you have the configuration settings, it would stub them out here, and you just have to fill in the value, and you're done with that. Okay, so that's pretty much all we need. There's one last thing, which actually let's hold off until the tip of the week for the last bit. But from there, I can call the cspack command. I actually wrote, let's see what it does. I wrote this little thing called packet. Which calls CSPack with the definition file.
Mm-hmm.
It tells CSPack where the different code is. So for a role called Hello World, I should have named these different things so it's clear. The role name is Hello World. The directory it lives in is also called Hello World.
Uh-huh.
And so Hello World is where, if you recall, I put all that stuff, right? So that's basically my directory full of stuff. Role properties file, we're going to talk about it in the tip of the week. And then out to this CSPKG.
Right. And there's a copy-only hook on there as well, and that's if you want to run it in the dev fabric.
If I wanted to run in the dev fabric, exactly, I would do slash copy-only, I would do
slash
out. Usually you do something .csx. Well, you do CSPack, which will create that directory.
And then CSRun.
Then you do CSRun, where you pass in that directory and the config, and you say slash launch browser, it will just sort of pop up and do it. And so that's a way that you can test that you haven't messed anything up by doing this. I actually wasn't doing that very much as I was developing this because I was playing with the local version here and running it under IIS Express locally.
Right.
And I was trusting that I knew what I was doing and packaging it up. But it's a good step in between to sort of do the copy only and run it locally. So running that CSPack command, now we have this file that I deleted earlier from an earlier run, but now we have the CSPKG and we have the CSCFG, and those are the two files that you need if you go to the portal to deploy something. You could also use the PowerShell command.
Now, we've talked about the CS package before, but that's really just a zip file.
It's a zip file.
Technically, if you don't turn off the encryption, it's an encrypted zip file at some point, so we've signed the package more or less, so we know that it was generated with our certificate.
It's been encrypted. The only person who can read it, if you haven't turned off encryption with this sort of environment variable, the only person who can read this package, every once in a while someone emails me and goes, well, this thing isn't working, here's my CSPKG. And I have to reply and say, I don't have the private key for this. Like, this was encrypted so that only the Windows Azure Fabric could unpack this and go run it. And they don't tell me what that key is. That's very well locked down because that's part of the security model here. Right. So it is actually, it's just a zip file that's then been encrypted. Yeah. It's sort of the Office package format of zip files, so it's a special kind of structure to the zip file, but it is zipped up. if you go explore in there, you would find a directory called Hello World that's got exactly the code that I put in there.
Yeah.
When we go unpack it, that's what we sort of lay down on the machine and run. So I hope this demystifies that process, because it's not that complicated. There's a bit of code. You sort of say what role that goes in and whatever. Nice little zip file gets created. You go deploy that to Windows Azure. We unzip it, lay it down, tell IIS to start serving requests. Things work from there. So,
easy peasy.
One thing that hung me up on this project for some time is that...
Well, is this the tip of the week?
But I'm giving the teaser.
Ooh.
Then we're gonna. So one thing that hung me up for a while was that you need .NET 4 to run these web matrix things. And when I built my CS package file and whatever and ran it in the cloud, it was only running with .NET 3.5.
Aha.
Why is that? And how can I fix it?
Dun dun dun.
For that, now it's time to introduce the tip of the week.
Well, as Steve is a professional packer these days, I think the tip of the week should be Steve in his new job as a packing manager.
Okay. Good luck with that, Bob.
Take that however you want to go. Steve will come over to your house and pack for you. Okay. Here you go.
Here's your tip of the week. All right.
That was great. Thanks, Bob.
Thank you, Bob, for that.
Okay.
Thank you, Ryan, for that. So, why was I running .NET 3.5 and not .NET 4, and how could I get Windows Azure to run this package as .NET 4?
I don't know.
The reason for why it was running .NET 3.5 is that's just the default. We have to run this stuff in one or the other, right? We have to have sort of a framework version that we run these things under. We need a way to choose it. It used to be .NET 3.5, so when .NET 4 became available, we didn't just automatically start running everything as .NET 4. We kept running it as .NET 3.5 if you didn't specify otherwise.
Right.
If you're in Visual Studio, whatever you choose as the target framework, if you choose .NET 4, magic just happens and everything becomes .NET 4. If you're using these commands yourself, you have to know how to do it.
Right.
And the way you do it, it's actually really easy, but you have to remember to do it. The reason this is a tip is think about whether you need .NET 4, make sure that you do this step. And basically, if you look at this packet command again, you will see there's this role properties file,
mm-hmm.
which is, again, just like the role thing. It first says the name of the role, hello world, and then it says what file has the properties for it, and it's roleproperties.txt. If we look what's in there, it says target framework version equals v4.0.
Right.
So that's it. It's just a text file that says it's key value pairs. I think there's one other thing I forget what the other thing is, but regardless, there's sort of, you put stuff in here. One of the things you can put in there is what target framework version you want. It's per role. You can actually decide to run some of your roles with one version, some with the other. And then you need to specify it when you do CS pack.
I wonder if your problem, what your deployment issue is right now, is in your web config, did you put target framework equals 4?
Web config says nothing about it either way.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I thought app config and web config, which are kind of the equivalents to each other in web and worker ways, have that startup framework v4, which you need. I've always had to use that. Otherwise, I get errors. Like, I can't find assemblies. Errors. I wonder if that's what it is. We'll have to check that out.
It can't be that, because I have the other version of WebMatrix, which also needed .NET 4, and I never... It's the same web config. So it can't actually be just that. I don't know. We're still, as you can see, our brains are spinning trying to figure out exactly what I've done wrong in sort of when I picked up the new bits.
That could be something else. But if you are using .NET 4, a lot of times if you look in the app config, there's a startup target framework, 4.0, whatever, and you need that. Because if anything else launched at 3.5 first, it won't know which version of the framework to start up. And you'll get this version mismatch, and you'll get some other errors. And in the web, what I've seen on the websites that I've deployed, and it could be something funny that I'm doing, I'm not using WebMatrix either, I've often seen that get injected. In fact, I think it's in the default template.
It could
if
be
you start a
especially
V4.
For web application or something that where you've got like global ASAX or something where there's actually code that runs as you start up. This stuff is sort of passive, like a directory full of HTML files, where you get invoked sort of.
It gets jitted
on
first call.
And so I think there may be a difference between sort of how the code is running. Notice, by the way, one thing we should actually, I think we should call out here is, I don't have a role entry point. Like when you start, when you go to Visual Studio and whatever, one of the things you get, it's sort of related because it's you use it for similar purposes sometimes, but you get a webroll.cs or in a worker role, you get workerroll.cs.
Yep.
And it's this role entry point, you define on start and run and things like that.
You could have that.
I could if I wanted to, as long as I have a DLL, as long as I have some assembly here where there's some class that implements role entry point, I can do it. I have to tell CSPAC which entry point, what assembly basically to look for the entry point in. But then it'll work.
And
I don't have one because I didn't need it.
It's optional for web roles, but it's mandatory for worker roles.
Mandatory for workers. Basically, in a web role, you get this default implementation that does nothing.
Yeah.
In a worker role, the all the work you do is in this thing. So you need to have this entry point. So for here, for this sort of web content that you're packing up, there's no reason you can't just skip it. If you want to have it there, like for instance, if I wanted to do what we did a few weeks back where
I combined, where
I put some queue monitoring stuff in webroll.cs, I could still do that. I haven't given anything up by not using Visual Studio in those templates. You can do all the stuff Visual Studio just uses these tools, right? So you can do everything that's done in Visual Studio for you. Using these tools, and it's really not—it's not too bad. Once you know what to do, once you've seen what the command looks like and whatever, it's actually really easy to use. I think what's hard is there's not a lot of examples, and not a lot of people are doing this, so you won't—it's not that easy to find instructions for how to do this.
And everybody who's using it, which PHP developers and Visual Studio developers are just using the respective
using whatever
tools,
the tooling is
and
the, around
that
those
tool
things.
Has kind of done it for you. Now, if you ever. Before the PHP tooling came around, if you ever wanted to deploy with PHP, you had to get down and dirty.
Well, you could do it.
It
in Visual Studio. You could do the CGI, which you can still do. There's like the CGI web role thing, which actually makes it not too bad, except that you have to pack up all the PHP binaries, which is sort of a pain in Visual Studio. The command line tools are a lot easier. But yeah, I was doing this for a while back. When I was doing PHP stuff, I was using CSPAC heavily. Since then, I haven't really used it because I'm almost always in a Visual Studio project. Even if you're doing MS Build from the command line or something, you still get the niceness of all this stuff that Visual Studio gives you. So I haven't used it in a while, but... Like I said, it wasn't really that hard. I did CSPAC/?, and sort of figured it all out again. And it really wasn't that big of a deal. You just need to know that it's possible. So. And I totally forgot the target framework version. I knew that. I still totally forgot it. I wasted a good hour or so, I think, last night.
That's good.
Just because I forgot about that thing. So hope this helps that we pointed that out to all of you. I think that's going to do it for this week. We will see you all next week. As always... Send us tweets at Cloud Cover Show or leave a comment, as people have been doing, on Channel 9, right down there. Assuming you're watching this right now on Channel 9, then down there refers to
as opposed to the homepage, where down there is just some other video.
It's some other
video. Go ahead, leave comments in other people's videos.
Please
that would be nice.
Do. They'll route it to us. Just say, this is for the Cloud Cover Show. Make them do the work. That's it. We will see you next week.
Hopefully. Bye.
Bye.